Okay, Parsha Shlach is the Parsha, of course, of the Meraglim, and it is, of all of the Parshios and of all of the stories in the Torah, of course, one of the most important, because this is the event that sealed Klal Yisrael's fate to not enter Eretz Yisrael, at least not to enter Eretz Yisrael immediately, and ultimately be forced to stay in the Midbar for 40 years. What's most shocking and surprising of the whole story is not really the fact that Bnei Israel sinned, not really the fact that they were punished the way that they were, but 39 years later, that Yoshua repeats the very, very same thing. And Yoshua himself sends spies to enter the land of Israel. And of course, that's the Haftorah for Parsha Shlach. And what I'd like to do this morning is really contrast the spies of Moshe to the spies of Yehoshua, and to try to see and understand how it could be that Yoshua seemed to have duplicated and replicated exactly what it was that Moshe Rabbeinu and Klal Yisrael did some 39 years earlier. Now, if everything was hunky-dory and everything worked out perfectly, then it would be very logical and meaningful and reasonable for Yoshua to send spies on a mission to enter the land of Israel to search and to figure out if they would be able to enter, how and when. But the fact that the Jewish people really failed, and it was a miserable, miserable report that was returned to Moshe, and ultimately the punishment was meted out as it was, the question that, of course, I'd like to answer most fundamentally is, how could Yehoshua do what he did? You read Parsha Shlach, and you just scratch your head, and you say, how did Bnei Yisrael do what they did? How did they report what they did? And of course, the sin is so depressing and sad. And after the sin, ultimately the punishment that's meted out. And after the punishment that's meted out comes the Nephilim, who say, no, 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 we will enter. We will be successful. We will be able to enter the land of Israel. And of course, they are knocked down and they are killed themselves. So the whole story of the spies is so painful, so disaster that occurs from it. The question, of course, that we are begged to understand is, how could it be that Yoshua, Perek Beis, chapter 2, repeats and duplicates the very same thing? So in order to understand Yoshua and Yoshua's mission, sending out the two spies, let's first try to understand Parsha Shlach and what it was that was the failure of the spies in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. So if you take a look on page 800 in the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, I'd like to do two things. I'd like to take a look at what the reason for their mission was. Why did Klal Yisrael go? What was their basis for wanting and asking Moshe Rabbeinu to send spies? And let's then see what exactly their report that they returned to Moshe with. So let's take a look at those two items, because those are the most fundamental and essential items that we need to understand, and then contrast that with what happens in Yoshua Perek Beis. So let's take a look now and see, why did the Jewish people want to send spies to the land of Israel? And if you take a look, it's quite patently obvious and it's blatant and there are no secrets. And if you take a look on Perek Yud Gimel, and actually we'll start on page 798, on the bottom of the page, Pasuk Yud Zayin, the Torah reports in Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Vayishlach Osa Moshe Lasaras Aretz. Moshe sent the spies to spy out the land of Israel. Vayomer Alem Aluze Benegev Alisa Mesahar. Moshe tells them to go start in the south, climb the mountain, and to see the land. And what will you see? Ureise Mes Aretz Mahi. We want to see the inhabitants of the land. What are they like? What are the people of the land like? Where do they live? How do they live? And furthermore, Pasuk Yotes, Umaha Aretz Asher Hu Yosheva, Hatova Imra. What is the nature of the land? What is it about? Is it a good property? Is it a bad property? Is it good real estate? Bad real estate? What's the nature of the land? What are the cities like? What do the cities look like? Are they enclosed? Are they fortified? Are they not fortified? Are there trees? Are there not trees? Is there fat in the land? Is there not fat in the land? Tell us all about the land of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu clearly sends them not on a military mission, but rather trying to figure out the nature of the land. What's the land like? Let's try to understand the basis of the land that we're going to inherit and conquer. Because Moshe Rabbeinu's intent is to pacify the people who are very concerned and nervous whether they'll be able to secure the land of Israel and conquer it. So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't send them on a military mission. It's not an espionage mission to figure out how we're going to conquer the land, what the land is going to be like, and how exactly we're going to overtake it. While it's true that Moshe Rabbeinu says we need to see what types of people are living there. Are they strong? Are they weak? Are the cities fortified or not? But at the end of the day, the primary reason for the spies being sent by Moshe Rabbeinu is to appreciate the land. What's the land look like? Let's prepare ourselves for the land of Israel, the land that we've been waiting for such a long time, from the Bris Bein HaBasarim hundreds of years ago. We're about to enter. Tell us about the land. Appreciate the land. So again, it's not a military espionage mission, but rather it's trying to understand, to secure the nation's faith, belief in the success of their ability to conquer, and more than that, to understand what the land is like and what the land is about. If you take a look and continue on page 802, there's a pasuk and there's a rashi that I believe is critical in understanding the entire passage of the Meraglim. So of course, on pasuk Lamed Beis 32, Vayotziu Dibas Haaretz, Klal Yisrael, the spies, the 10 spies speak negatively about the land of Israel. Vayomer, and what do they say? Haaretz Asher Avarnu, but the land at which we have looked at, Eretz Ocheles Yoshvehi, it's a land that eats up its inhabitants. It completely attacks its inhabitants. There's nothing left of its people. It's a dangerous land. Now, what was it about the land that they saw that was so dangerous that it ate up its inhabitants? What does that mean? Eretz Ocheles Yoshvehi. So Rashi explains that, you know what they saw? The Meraglim saw the following. On a regular basis, they were watching funerals take place. And they were watching and seeing that it was a very dangerous place because so many people were dying. And the Jewish people, the spies who were there, saw that. They recognized that. They understood that. And they thought that this was not a place to settle and to conquer. Little did they know, says Rashi, that that wasn't the basis of the fact that the funerals were taking place, but rather was just the opposite. And Rashi says, "Vakadosh Baruch Hu asa l'tova." God did it for the spies' benefit. Kidei l'tardam be'evlam v'lo yitnu leiv le'elu. God created that there would be funerals taking place specifically when the spies were there, to allow the spies to do their work, because everybody else was concentrated and focused on funerals taking place. So what Rashi is teaching us and what Rashi is fleshing out in terms of the Meraglim is that their focus was only on what they wanted to see and not what was really happening in real time. So much so that the Medrash actually comments, if you look in Eicha, Megillas Eicha, it's all in alphabetical order, pasuk by pasuk, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey. Each of the chapters minus one goes in alphabetical order, besides for two letters in the alphabet. Ayin always comes before Pei. The letter Ayin, of course, in the alphabet is preceding Pei. Ayin, the letter, is also Ayin, the I. Peh is representative of the peh. We say peh like peh. Peh is the mouth. So ayin, the eyes, always come before the mouth. Meaning, when a person sees something, a person has to notice, think, contemplate, react, and then speak about what you see. However, in Me'echa, the peh comes before the ayin. In every single chapter, when you go in alphabetical order from aleph to tav, so ayin pasuk should precede the pei pasuk, but indeed the pei precedes the ayin. And the Medrash comments, because ikdimu peh la'ayin, the Meraglim placed their mouth before their eyes. They spoke before they saw, and they spoke because they said what they wanted to say without seeing what had to be seen. Of course, the Meraglim is the precursor. The Gemara explains in Maseches Tainis and what caused ultimately the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, as the pasuk says here, Vayivchu ha'am balayla ha'hu, that the nation cried that night when the spies returned with their report. And God said, you're crying about this, I'll really give you something to cry about. And hundreds of years later, the destruction of the first and second Beis HaMikdash took place on Tisha B'Av, the very same day that Klal Yisrael returned with their negative report. So therefore, the Meraglim's statements consistently, hikdimu peh la'ayin, they always placed their mouth before their eyes. And therefore, that was the nature of the sin of the Meraglim. They weren't willing to look deeper, to look farther, and to understand that God was going to help them every single step of the way. God was walking with them into the land of Israel. And their inability to appreciate the fact that it wasn't just them and only them that were responsible for conquering and inheriting the land of Israel, but rather God would help them as long as they were willing to push and to fight and to start the process. And this Kalev understood, and this Yehoshua understood, that there was going to have to be a necessity for them to do something. But at the same time, God was going to be able to help them. So the failure of the Meraglim was not the fact that they reported correctly, which they did. The failure of the Meraglim was their inability to really assess the situation differently and the ability to look at something differently. And so often, the fact that they saw something and didn't force themselves, well, how about we look at it differently? And that's what Rashi is focusing on. The fact that God created the situation, Shavarnu, Matsanu, Kovre, Mason, wherever they went, they saw dead bodies being buried, and that they assumed meant that it was an Eretz, Ocheles, Yoshvehi, that it was a land that ate its inhabitants. They should have thought and recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asa L'tova Kedei L'tardam Be'evlam, that God did it in order to secure them the ability to enter without being seen. And therefore, that was the mistake that they made. So really, when you look at the Chet HaMeraglim and you look at the reason for them being sent, all two of those points really are unable to be manufactured. God sends them via Moshe to tell the people to return with a positive report, to uplift the people that they'll have the ability to enter the land of Israel and secure it and conquer it. That's what Moshe tells them to do. Go check out the land. Is it look like this? Does it look like that? Does it have trees? Does it not have trees? Is it a land that's flowing with milk and honey, as they say? Also, Gam, it's also flowing with milk and honey. But they're unable to put those two pieces together. The reason that Moshe sent them and they came back dafka with the opposite, dafka giving a negative report, not sharing the positives of the land. And when they did, it was a spin that was negative. That is the Parsha of the Meraglim. And that is Moshe's spies, and that is Parsha Shlach. With that background in the Parsha, let's take a look at the Haftorah and try to understand the similarities and the differences between the spies in the times of Yehoshua and really address the fundamental question, how is it that Yehoshua replicated, duplicated, imitated exactly what occurred 39 years earlier in such a failed mission? Of course, as we will read the Haftarah, Yehoshua's mission was just the opposite. It was a successful mission. And the spies returned with a very positive report. But what changed? Why all of a sudden now, 39 years later, did everything look different? Was it simply because of the fact that they saw the negative mistakes that occurred 39 years earlier and therefore everything was different? We know mistakes are repeated. Mistakes are always repeated. So why was the mistake not repeated again? How did the spies act differently and why did they act differently? And how was it that Yehoshua was able to maneuver and to set up a situation whereby the Meraglim were going to be able to do what they were supposed to do properly? If you take a look in the Haftarah, and if you have the Stone Chumash on page 1184 from Yehoshua Perek Beis, let's take a look at the Psukim and see very carefully some very significant, really fundamental and categorical differences between the spies of Moshe and the spies of Yehoshua. So take a look in Perek Beis, Pasuk Aleph, the Haftorah for Parasha Shlach. Vayishlach Yehoshua ben Nun, min hashitim, shnayim anashim, miraglim, cheresh, lemor, l'chu ru'u es ha'aretz vesiricham. And I want to draw your attention to the first Pasuk in the Haftarah, Perek Beis, Pasuk Aleph, and I believe you will see five significant differences between the way the spies left, their attitude, their approach, as well as the very technical differences which take place between Parsha Shlach and the Haftarah for Parsha Shlach, the spies of Moshe and the spies of Yehoshua. Number one, Vayishlach Yehoshua. Yehoshua sends the spies. If you take a look back in Parsha Shlach, Moshe didn't send the spies. It says, Shlach lecha anoshim v'yasuru es eretz Kanan. Moshe wasn't prepared. He didn't necessarily want the spies to be sent. But rather what occurred is that the people were so frightened, so scared, so nervous, so overwhelmed to enter the land of Israel, Moshe was forced to ask God, is it okay that these people want to send spies? And therefore, it's not Moshe who's sending them, but it's really Moshe's hand being forced. Shlach lecha. Of course, Rashi comments, ledaitcha. Ani eini mitzav lecha. I'm not commanding you. In tirtza shlach. If you want to send spies, you may do so. The people asked Moshe. So very, very different set of circumstances at the outset. The opening pasuk in Shlach to the opening pasuk in Haftorah. An opening pasuk in Shlach, Vaydaber Hashem Moshe lemor Shlach lecha anoshim. The people force Moshe's hand. There's no reason to send spies. As opposed to the Haftorah for Parsha Shlach 39 years later, Yehoshua, Perek Beis, Vayishlach Yehoshua Benun. It's Yehoshua's idea. It's Yehoshua's initiative, not the people's. Yehoshua has an agenda. He has a mission, which we will see momentarily what it is. Furthermore, take a look at another very significant difference. How many spies are sent? The Pasuk says, Shnayim Anashim, two spies. As opposed, of course, to Parsha Shlach, the spies of Moshe, how many spies are sent? 12. Another difference. What are the names of these spies? Yehoshua Perek Beis doesn't tell us the names. It's true, the Medrash in Bamidbar tells us that they were Kalev ben Yefuna and Pinchas. But the Torah and the Navi don't tell us who the spies were in the times of Yehoshua. So we don't have as many spies. We don't have 12. We have two. As opposed to Parsha Shlach, where we know every name of each of the spies and which shevet they were part of. The Torah goes out of its way in the opening psukim and Shlach before even knowing the mission that they were being sent on. We know their names and we know their numbers and we know their tribes. And then the next word is critical in the Pasuk. Shnayim anashim miraglim cheresh. What does cheresh mean? Secretly. It was a real espionage mission of the highest order. The opposite of what takes place in the spies of Moshe Rabbeinu. Everybody knows about it. It's a full national event. So much so that Moshe's hand is forced because all of the Jewish people forced Moshe to send spies. It's a national hysteria in Moshe Rabbeinu's time with Moshe Rabbeinu's spies. Everybody knows. What's the secret? We're sending out people. And who do they report to when they return? They come back and the spies speak to everybody. Everybody knows what's happening. Take a look in the second to last pasuk in all of the Haftorah of Parsha Shlach, pasuk Chav Gimel. Who do the two spies return to? Vayashuvu shnei ha'anashim vayerdu mehar vayavru vayavo el Yehoshua benun vayisapru lo es kol ha'motzososam. Who do they return to? Who do they go to? Only to Yehoshua. So note very significant differences, at least three, about the secrecy, the silence of the mission in the times of Yehoshua, as opposed to just the opposite. In the times of Moshe, everybody knew about it. There are 12 spies. We know their names. The entire nation knows about it. And they return with their report to speak to everybody. The spies of Yehoshua, we don't know their names. There are only two of them. They leave based upon Yehoshua's command and they return to Yehoshua and the Jewish people don't even know about this mission. So much so that the pasuk goes out of its way to say, cheresh, silence, quiet. It was under the cover. Nobody knew what was happening. And therefore, there's no secret here as opposed to what's taking place in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's very clear. And the Navi is being very, very blatant, specific, and explicit about the fact that this is a secretive mission. But why is the fact that it's secretive so important? We all know the difference between the first Luchos and the second Luchos, that which caused the other terrible sin in the Zman of the Midbar, the Egel Hazav. The reason that the first Luchos weren't kept because they were given bepumbi in great, great aura. Everybody knew about it. It was a great event. The whole world knew what was taking place. And sometimes when things happen on a large scale, it ultimately falls apart. Ein habracha shriya ela ala davar hasamu min ha'ayin. Ein lecha yafe ela min atznias. When things are quiet, when things are silent, they could be more successful. You don't know how much you can do if you don't want to get credit for something. And therefore, the success Yehoshua understood of this mission had to be in silence, because the failure of the first mission came as a result of everybody knowing about it. The fact that it was reported back to everybody was a terrible failure. The Meraglim could have reported what they did, but they should have gone first to Moshe and to Aaron and to discuss what they saw. How do we present this to the people? Instead, they caused a national hysteria that everybody was frightened and scared. Kalev had to silence the nation. It was a rebellion of the ultimate order. And therefore, Yehoshua understands for us to be successful, it has to be cheresh. But even more so, there's another word in the first pasuk in the Haftarah Parsha Shlach that is dramatically different to what you see in the Parsha. How do we refer to the spies in Shlach, and how do we refer to the spies in Yehoshua? The spies in the Parsha Shlach are referred to as Torim, Lasur Es Haaretz. Here in the Haftarah, they're referred to Miraglim. A very significant difference. What does it mean, Lasur Es Haaretz? And of course, it's no coincidence that the Parsha of Tzitzis is written immediately after the Parsha of the Meraglim. Lo Sasuru Acharei Levavachem V'Acharei Einecha. Lasur means to look for something that's going to be negative. Torim Es Haaretz is a reference to the fact that they were looking to report negatively, as we described in that Rashi. They were sort of trying to come up with a way to report the negative. Losur Es Haaretz Banu means that they're looking to be losasuru acharei levavachem ve'acharei einechem. They're looking to be corrupt. They're looking to be manipulative. They're looking to cause a problem and not to see things the way that they should be seen. A miragel is secret. Liragel is the raglayim, are the feet that are moving quietly, silently. A miragel is often somebody who does something conspicuous. You could do it negatively and you could do it positively. But miraglim cheresh again speaks to this point that this is a mission that's going to be successful if we're quiet and silent about it. Too often when something is put outside on social media, on public platforms, and you talk about things too publicly, it'll be a failure. Successful missions happen when things happen quietly and silently, not just from a practical military reason, but also for spiritual reasons. And that's what Yehoshua understands. Ein lecha yaf ein amenatznias. Ein habracha shruya el adavar samim min ayin. For success, spiritual and physical, to occur, for the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, for Klal Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, to be able to settle and to conquer the land of Israel, the most important thing that the Jewish nation has been waiting for ever since Avraham Avinu had the covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Bris Ben Avosam, that you're going to enter the land of Israel. This is the nation, this is the people, this is the relationship. It has to be done properly, quietly, silently. This is the first reason that the mission of Yehoshua is much, much more successful, because Yehoshua appreciates what went wrong the first time, and Yehoshua is driving the mission. It's not coming out of national fear or national hysteria, but there's leadership of Yehoshua sending them, telling them this is how it's going to be. But there's a categorical difference that takes place between the mission and the spies of Yehoshua and the mission and the spies of Moshe. As I noted at the beginning, why did Moshe send the spies? Moshe sent the spies to see if this was a pleasant land to settle, to conquer. We wanted to see what it was about, what it was like, what the land was like. Was it a good land? Was it a bad land? It was trying to figure out what the nature of the land was. That was its essence. What's the productivity of the land? Is it fertile? Its health? Its inhabitants? That's what Moshe wanted to see. Yehoshua's mission was ultimately different. What was Yehoshua's mission about? Yehoshua's mission indeed was a military espionage mission. That's what it was. Because where does Yehoshua send the people to go? Vayomer laMelech and Pasuk Beis Yericho Lemor Hinei Anoshim Ba Hinei Halayla Mibnei Yisrael Lach Por Es Haaretz. They're coming to search out the land, and specifically Yericho, because Yericho, as the Pasuk stresses both in Perek Beis Pasuk Aleph and Perek Beis Pasuk Beis of Yehoshua, Yericho is going to be the first place that we're going to conquer and attack, and therefore Yehoshua needs to know what the city of Yericho is about. It's a fortified city. It's a walled city. Yehoshua needs to know what he's getting involved with. It's a military mission, as opposed to a mission that's going to check out the productivity of the land. Thus, Moshe and Yehoshua, and the spies in the times of Moshe, the spies in the times of Yehoshua, have two very different directives and two very different agendas. Yoshua's mission is a military agenda. It's a military espionage mission. Will we and how will we conquer Yericho to begin in Yericho and to move from Yericho to the outskirts of the country? That wasn't at all the focus of the spies in Parsha Shlach. It wasn't a military focus. Of course, we needed to know what we were getting involved with and the inhabitants of the land. But the focus of the first mission and Moshe's spies was not that. Is it fertile? Is it not fertile? Is it productive land? Is it not productive land? Are there trees? Are there not trees? Those two very different focuses. And when there's a focus like the type of focus there was in Yehoshua, the people knew exactly what to respond to. And when you leave the people with too much questions to suggest, to offer opinions, that's what ultimately allowed the Meraglim to speak and to say what they did. But the most critical difference between the mission of Yehoshua and the spies, and the mission and the spies of Moshe, is the report that was returned. And if you take a look now in the Haftarah and the Navi Yehoshua Perek Beis, let's look very carefully at what the spies, two spies, whose names we don't know, who went quietly, who nobody knows anything about, what do they hear? They go to the house of Rachav, a very famous woman who has all of the information at her hand. She knows everything that's taking place, and that's the reason that they go to her home. And when they enter her home and they speak to her, they listen very carefully. And this is exactly what the Meraglim didn't do. Shikdimu pelayin. The Meraglim spoke before they heard. But if you look in the Haftarah and the Navi, it's not what the Meraglim did in the story of Yehoshua. They listened and they listened and they listened. They rarely spoke, if ever. They go to a house of Rachav to hear what she has to say. And what does she say if you take a look in Pasuk Tes in the Haftarah and the Navi? Vatomer l'anashim, what does she tell these two men? Yadati ki nosan Hashem lachem esaret. I know that God is going to give you this land. V'chinafla imaschem aleinu. And the fear of the Jewish people has been placed upon us. And everybody's afraid and scared of Klal Yisrael. Why? Pasuk Yud. Kishamanu. We have heard. We heard how the entire Yamsuf dried up. When you left Egypt, after the Aseres HaMakos, after Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, and the entire sea dried up miraculously. And you destroyed the two great enemies, Emori and Sichon and Og. And they're hearing what this woman is telling them. Vanishma, Pasuk Yud Aleph, when we heard, Vayamas Levavenu, she says, our hearts melted. V'lokama od ruach be'ish mipneichem, and no spirit is left in man. Ki Hashem Elokeichem hu Elokim, we know that God is your God. Bashamayim mimal v'alaretz mitachas, God in heavens above and in the earth below. That's all that Kalev and Pinchas need to hear. They heard everything. She tells them that the people are scared, they're frightened. The people have melted. They know about what has occurred. And all of a sudden, they need nothing else. The Shnayim Miraglin Cheresh have heard exactly what they need. And then a deal is struck between Rachav and the two men that they promised that when they return to the land of Israel and successfully conquer the land, that they will save her and anybody in her house. And then the Torah continues and the Navi continues, and take a look. and the two closing psukim in the Haftarah for Shlach, Vayashuvu Shnei Hanashim Vayeridu Mehahar, the two men whose names we still don't know. Vayavru Vayavol Yoshua, again, they only go to Yoshua, they don't speak to the nation. Vayisapru Loas Kolamotzosam, and they tell about all of the great things that occur. Now, note, by the way, they could have very easily reported and responded exactly the same way that the 10 spies did. They were hidden. They were being run after. They were being chased after. They had to flee. Any event can be sliced, explained, and looked at in two different ways. And just like the Meraglim and Shlach of Moshe Rabbeinu could have reported, we came back and you won't believe it, there were funerals and that allowed us to go straight into the land and to see everything that we needed to see, and we came right back. But instead they said that there were terrible funerals taking place and it's an Eretz Ocheles Yoshveha. The Meraglim, two of them, in the times Yeshua could have said, we are being chased after, we are being forced after, we couldn't do anything, we couldn't accomplish. There are men there, they are successful, they're able to find us, to catch us. They don't say that because the glass is half full and the glass is not half empty. And the final closing pasuk in the Haftarah, Vayomer el Yoshua, ki nosan Hashem biyadeinu es kol haaretz, v'gam namogu kol yoshvei haaretz mipneinu. They report to Yoshua in a very impassioned, emphatic way. God has placed those people in our hands, and the land is ours. All of the people of the land have melted as a result of the fear before us. We will accomplish, we will do, we will succeed. Of course, this is the very same Kalev that was sent 39 years earlier. So Yoshua understood that he had the right vision. He understood how to understand something, just like Pinchas. Pinchas, when he saw something inappropriate, he acted right away. And therefore, we see that although Yoshua seems to duplicate, replicate, mimic exactly what happened 40 years ago, and that asks us, and that begs us to ask the question, how can we do this all over again? How can we send spies and imitate exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu was involved with and that caused the terrible sin and the punishment of being subjugated to being wandering in the Midbar for 40 years? But we see very clearly that there's some significant categorical differences that take place in the two missions 40 years apart. Number one, it's the secrecy, the silence, the cover-up of the event, teaching us to not speak about everything that we need to talk about. Just because there are things happening doesn't mean I need to share it with everybody. Not everybody needs to know everything. I don't have to share with the world everything that's taking place. The difference between the destruction of the first Luchos and why the second Luchos exists, of course, as Rashi points out, because the second ones were given quietly, peacefully, without all the fanfare and the hoopla, as opposed to the first, which were given with a lot of excitement, enthusiasm. That is the difference between the first mission and the second mission. The first mission was sent with a lot of excitement and enthusiasm, hysteria, fear. Everybody knows about it. We know who the spies are, how many spies there are, where they're from, and who they return to. They return to everybody. Here we don't know the spies. There are only two of them. We don't know their names, and they only return to Yoshua. Thus, the success of conquering the land of Israel has to be with silence, with shtika. That's how the bracha of Eretz Yisrael is going to be niknes, and the kinyan of Eretz Yisrael is going to be established. But more than that, we have to appreciate how to view and to see something. There are always two ways to look at an event. Is the glass half full? Is the glass half empty? Is it this side of the coin or the other side of the coin? How am I going to spin what I saw? Have I been mocked in my peh to the ayin or to the ayin to the peh? What's coming first, my eyes or my mouth? The Torah tells us in the Jewish alphabet, it's ayin and then the peh, and then the peh. First the eyes and then the mouth. As if that's what happened in the Haftarah for Parsha Shlach. That's what happened with the Meraglim of Yehoshua. They heard, they listened, they saw, and then they spoke. And who did they speak to? Only to Yehoshua. The Meraglim of Moshe 39 years earlier was just the opposite. They spoke and they spoke and they spoke and they spoke and they spoke. And they didn't listen, they didn't listen, they didn't hear, they didn't see. And that was the error, that was the mistake that occurred. And therefore, the third difference that we have to flesh out, of course, is their ability and the spies of Yoshua to appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help us. As the spies say, Kinasan Hashem biyadeinu es haaretz, God has given us the land. What the Meraglim in the times of Moshe don't appreciate is that it's not just up to them, but it's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help them. We have to push. We have to cause. It's action reaction. We have to force the event. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to hold our hand to allow us to enter Eretz Yisrael. And that's what Kalev and Pinchas understand. That's what Kalev and Yoshua understand. But that's what the Meraglim didn't understand in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. And what the conquest of Klal Yisrael and Sefer Yoshua and the success of the conquest is in each of these three points. Is in silence, is in how to look at something, and how to appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help us. Therefore, of course, Yoshua did not repeat the mistake. And of course, the reason that Yoshua's mission is successful in the return of the spies and the report that they gave is for each of these reasons. Thus, if you take a look at the Haftarah and the Parsha, they're anything but similar. They're actually polar opposites. And the Haftarah to the Parsha Shlach doesn't complement the Parsha, but it rather distinguishes quite dramatically the difference between the two spies sending, being sent, one by Moshe, one by Yeshua. And of course, there's so much to take away in terms of the Parsha and the Haftarah, in terms of appreciating Parsha Shlach, in terms of appreciating the beginning, at least, of Sefer Yoshua, and more than that, understanding our relationship to Eretz Yisrael, how to successfully conquer Eretz Yisrael, and of course, ultimately, Bezus Hashem Yisbarach, to follow and to see the return of Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, the way we're supposed to be, where we're supposed to be. Wishing everybody a wonderful, wonderful